And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and yes, we're talking about your resurgent winners of, what, I guess, 9 out of 11, not 9 out of 10 anymore. Toronto Blue Jays, sitting pretty in the wild card race right now, just coming off splitting a series with the St. Louis Cardinals when we are recording. We, of course, being me, Drew Fairservice, your host of Spin Rate, which we do twice a week, once a week with Caitlin McGrath, who covers the team for The Athletic, once a week with Ricky Romero, former Blue Jays starter and all-star, who joins me today from beautiful downtown Mississauga, beautiful downtown Port Credit, excuse me. Ricky, how's it going?
Doing great, man. What a turn of events, right? We go from everyone wanting to talk crap on the Jays, and all of a sudden we're back on the horse again, and it looks like they've found themselves offensively. They're pitching well, and it's good to see.
The last week has been good for what ails you if you are the Toronto Blue Jays. First, you got a already struggling and then depleted Kansas City Royals club. Then you go into Boston, where the Boston Red Sox were absolutely handing out wins. Would you like a win? Would you like an extra base hit? Would you like to reach on an error? The Red Sox just looking really, really rough, depleted by injuries they were as well. But it doesn't matter. All those wins count. The Blue Jays need to win games, and they won. If you're damned if you do, they say, well, you got to beat these bad teams. But then when you beat bad teams or teams that are struggling, you're like, well, you haven't beaten anybody. Like, come on. It's brutal. And then the St. Louis Cardinals come into town, and they got handed a big old helping of Blue Jays offense. Blue Jays scored 10 runs Tuesday night. And then last night, Wednesday night, turned back the clock night at the Rogers Center. Where the Blue Jays fell to the St. Louis Cardinals. But splitting a series against a pretty good Cardinals team, one that's missing its two best players, but because they're the Cardinals, they are able to grow extremely good players out of like a cornfield and then just plop them in all over the place. Man, the Cardinals are a lot of things, but they are just so good at player development and like bringing these guys out of nowhere. Yeah. And what's his name? Dylan Carlson, was that his name? Yeah. They got such good young players. That's you see now why that they're a team that people think can acquire Juan Soto, because there's so many of those guys that can step in and play every day and be a real difference maker. But so a good team, but you know, again, the Blue Jays dropped 10 on them, and then obviously couldn't quite solve Adam Wainwright on Wednesday night. I know, let's start with Wainwright and that outing, because I saw you kind of carrying the flag for crafty pitchers, for guys who are able to throw, you know, to really hit their spots, to mix and match, and to really get hitters off balance, even though he doesn't throw 100 miles an hour. A great outing from Wainwright, who is one of the greats, one of the best pitchers, the pitchers of his generation at this point.
Yeah, and the reason why I tweeted, it's not necessarily a knock on velocity, because velocity is good, right? I mean, we live in a time where if you're throwing 100, 101. Cool, you know, but you have to be able to locate. And we're looking at a guy like Jordan Hicks, who a few years ago was nearly unhittable. And right now he's throwing 102 and hitting the backstop. What good does that really do, you know, in a game? Is he a guy that can be reliable? Of course not. And then you watch Wainwright and the way he attacks hitters. And man, it looks like that curveball has just never left him. It's always just been there for him. And he had the Jays hitters pretty baffled. He'd throw that like little slider down and away, and then he'd flip that. I like to say this. He's got the best Twitter handle in the game, or one of the best, in Uncle Charlie or something like that. And he just went out there and pitched, man. And I think that's what it comes down to. When you go out there and pitch and you locate your fastball, and then you work off your fastball into your off speed. And if I'm a guy that's, you know, we have a guy like that on the mound tonight in Kikuchi, that struggles with fastball control, and you watch that guy on the other side and you're like, man, like, I guarantee you those hitters came back to the dugout saying, how did I miss that pitch? Every at bat. Because he just, he's that guy right now. He's a guy that had to adapt. Because he's not the same power pitcher that he once was. We've seen it with him. We saw it with CeCe Sabathia. CeCe Sabathia took like a couple seasons before he finally realized, like, okay, I don't have 98 in the tank anymore. I got to learn how to pitch. Same with Clayton Kershaw.
Sabathia, I will say this. Skinny CeCe was bad CeCe. Need to be big. Big pitchers have long careers. That there's been some research into that. Guys that start big, you got to stay big. And when CeCe Sabathia, he really got healthy. I think he quit drinking and stuff because he was going through a difficult time with alcohol. But put the weight back on, he was good to go right at the end. And it's really about that evolution of a pitcher. And I mean, not, you know, there's only one Max Scherzer. People love to be like, well, about Nolan Ryan, he was doing this, throwing complete games. It's like, he's a freak. He happens once every 50 years. And I think Max Scherzer might be the closest thing we've got to that now, where he's 38, still throwing 100, still throwing just three perfect pitches whenever he wants. There was, real quick aside on Max Scherzer, there was a great thing on Baseball Prospectus that Jeff Paternoster, who's been on the show a few times, he was scouting a double A game, and Scherzer came and was doing a rehab start. So he did like a scouting report on Scherzer, and it was like, the way he described it was so good. It was like he could dominate this lineup with one pitch. If they said only throw your fastball, he's like, okay, and he would have been fine. But because he's just so good. But like Wainwright, man, he had a couple rough years, you know, 2017, 2018. But for the last like few years, he's been really good again. He's solid. Just like, he threw 200 innings last year. You want to talk about a throwback? What's more of the throwback than that? Of course, it's fun to watch guys like that. And again, it's hard to do. It's hard to keep your body, keep your motivation when you're 40 years old. You've been playing for 18 years, whatever it is. But a real contrast between the guys that, with him starting compared to Ryan Helsley coming out of the bullpen. Oof. Oh, my God. Oh, nasty. He's not exactly young. I mean, he's 28. He's early in his career. But, like, he is everything that what baseball is in 2022. Because he throws 102, 103. He threw it less than half the time.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just a slider. And then he throws a curveball. It's even slower. Slider was 92 at one point yesterday. Shout out to Vlad, who, like, looked so bad on a few swings and then still was managed to be ready and hit really hard, 101. He grounded out. But, like, that can't be easy. But that's a real, like, whiplash going from trying to figure out Wainwright all day to then this guy. You get Giovanni Gallardo, who's really good. And then you get Helsley coming in. They're just throwing absolute missles like that.
Yeah.
Giovanni Gallegos, excuse me.
Gallardo is my time, man.
Yeah.
The great Giovanni Gallardo.
Giovanni Gallardo. He was good. He was good for Milwaukee. He was the guy.
And I was going to say, you know what? Yeah, we do get caught up in velocity. There's velocity for certain roles. Obviously, the bullpen roles, you have guys that are coming in, throwing hard and locating, fine. But when you're a starter and you're throwing hard and you're only lasting 3-4 innings, what good does that do a team? So that's where where I feel like velocity difference, and it's just better for me a guy that can go out there and pitch and give you quality innings. And if a guy is out there and he works quick, Wainwright works quick. He's boom. He's on the mound. Boom. Here you go. Hit it. Like what's the worst that can happen?
Two things. Number one is, I think, I mean, your generation, I'm making it sound like you're like a grandfather, but the idea, I think a lot of that sports psychology, like commit to every pitch and like almost every pitch is like max effort. It's not like you would hear about in the old days where these guys would be throwing like 80%, just trying to like get it over, get you to roll over. But efficiency always matters. You can commit and have every pitch be max effort and you're committed to that pitch and you take that time and do whatever, but you still need to be efficient. And, that's everything that sounds like we're kind of talking about. You say Kikuchi sort of like under our breath a little bit in this conversation, because he's not that. He's not a guy who has been efficient. He's not a guy who has been who's able to attack the strike zone, be aggressive. Like, again, Wainwright doesn't throw hard, but he doesn't shy away. He's not trying to get you to chase everything out of the zone. He sets up that curveball with that cutter. He sets up that cutter with that four seamer. Like where you said, they go back to the dugout and they're like, what the hell? How did I miss that? But because it all works together and it's all It's all kind of up there. And well, actually, one thing, two things, again, related to Wainwright. One thing was Buck Martinez, of course, made his return to the ballpark this week, which was greeted with great love and appreciation from all Blue Jays fans. Everybody's glad to see Buck back in the booth. But he had something. He noticed something with Wainwright, that Wainwright was almost tipping his pitches a little bit using the pitch comm, because he was nodding twice. So it was like, if he nods twice, it's like, okay, yes, fastball and yes, location, as opposed, and then when it was a curveball, he'd just say yes, and then he would just whatever, throw it on the outside corner. I thought that was a really interesting observation, and I don't know that it's maybe something the Blue Jays didn't pick up on last night, but something to keep your eye on, maybe a little pitch comm tell that's going on in real time.
And that's crazy, man, that he can, right? Like, who would think to be looking for that? Like, that's mm-hmm. the difference between, like, a guy who's baseball knowledge is on another level, like and he was a manager, so he knows, he's a catcher, so he knows to mm-hmm. look out for stuff like that. Like, who would have ever thought that you'd be getting picked by PitchCom? Yeah. Usually it's like you're mm-hmm. tipping your glove, you're you know, your catcher's giving away location or signs. Mm-hmm. No, but PitchCom, like the way he was nodding his head, I would never think to look at that, but what an observation by Buck Martinez, and so glad to have him back. And he was missing, and I'm glad he's back and healthy doing his thing.
Mm-hmm. Also, there was another, Joe Siddle had something on the broadcast too about Danny Jansen, about the way yeah. Jansen was setting up wide. I mean, I look for that sometimes, where it's like, if the ass is high, right? If your ass is up, it's going to be a fastball. The catcher's, and if he's sitting down low, it's more likely to be a breaking ball. So we can kind of like get down and block it. But he was noticing about how wide Jansen was getting. I mean, we could talk real quick about Kevin Gausman. Again, he just hasn't really been as sharp recently, and just really kind of struggled. He obviously pitched in the big 28-5 game, and it wasn't great, but he did the job because it was like a zero leverage situation. But couldn't get out of the fifth inning last night, and just wasn't really getting the swings and misses. I don't know if it's a physical thing again, or if we just need to kind of reestablish sort of his fastball. I don't know. Is there anything that sticks out to you from watching Gausman a bit?
Yeah, you have to wonder if that ankle is bothering him. If he's not back still to 100%. Obviously, he's going out there trying to gut it out and trying to give the team quality innings. And I was a little bit surprised they didn't let him face Pujols yesterday. Again, I feel like the starter in me wants to finish what I started. You know, you don't want to leave those runners on base for a reliever to come in and you know, and see what we saw what happened. And obviously, as a starter, you would feel better if Pujols took you deep and you're like, okay, he got me. And but it's tough to. I was pretty surprised that he was pulled after 4 2/3. I just, again, you've grinded all game, and I feel like, you know, in that spot, I feel like he should have gotten a shot to get out of it. And but yeah, I just have to wonder. Obviously, the sharpness hasn't been there, and you have to wonder if it's the ankle still, if it's bothering him a little bit, if he's going out there and trying to push himself a little bit. And if he is, I mean, you just hope that he doesn't re-injure it or start compensating, because that's what happens. You start compensating, your mechanics start suffering a little bit, and your stuff is not as sharp as it's been in the past.
Mm-hmm. I mean, his velocity was still good, so that's, you know, that's always the first place, you know, for me, that's the first place I go. Like, is he throwing as hard? But hopefully he's you can get that sorted out and sort of just continue to work through and sort of what we've seen. I mean, a guy who's known predominantly as a two-pitch pitcher, you know, it's always going to be a challenge. It's always going to be tough to sort of keep things fresh and keep hitters guessing. And you know, he didn't throw the slider quite as much last night. And yeah, you brought up an interesting point about letting him face Pujols. Cause I mean, with missing Goldschmidt and Arenado as the Cardinals were, is Pujols like the guy you're the most afraid of in that lineup? Obviously he took Trevor Richards, like a very long way to center field, but at the same time, he is, you know, 42-year-old Albert Pujols. If the guy, no matter how bad he's going, I like to think that I could get my big free agent pitcher guy, you know, the kind of ace of my staff. Can you get the 42-year-old for me, please? Like that, I don't think that's, I don't feel like that's too big an ask.
Yeah. You hit it right on the money right there. You, you're paying this guy to get these guys out and to get you through at least five innings. And if I'm in that situation, I want the ball. And I felt like Gausman was a little bit shocked when he saw Schneider walking out. He kind of started looking around like, wait, what? And again, it's one of those things where Schneider felt like he had a better matchup. And again, if it all goes well, we're like, wow, what a great move, but it didn't. So obviously we sit here and dissect it a little bit more. And you know, you have to wonder what the role is going to be going forward with Trevor Richards, and a guy that's been, you know, killed by the long ball this season. And you look at a guy like David Phelps and how he's established himself as one of the go-to guys in that bullpen. I mean, you look at the numbers and what he's been able to do. He's been solid. You have to wonder a little bit, why didn't we go to Phelps there instead of Richards? I know Richards had been pitching well, but he's still a guy that, you know, the long ball is his enemy right now. So a lot of questions. Again, it's one game, but I'm sure those guys will be ready to play this week.
We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I think Trevor Richards is a good opportunity for us to kind of transition this conversation a little bit towards the trade deadline. As you said, Trevor Richards, since he came off the DL, he had been pitching quite well. He hit through seven consecutive scoreless outings, struck out 15, walked two, didn't give up any runs. And then he kind of ran into a little bit of trouble in Boston. He gave up a triple to Duran. He gave up a home run. But all in all, I mean, but not all. Those are bad outcomes. And then now he's had a bit of a rough outing against the Cardinals. He's the kind of guy that you obviously value and you want to have him around. But at the same time, that's the sort of guy or the sort of position that you would think that you can upgrade. And because you know what you can get from him, but maybe you need someone who is a little bit more reliable. And I mean, he came in and pitched in the fifth inning. It's not like you're using him in high leverage, but he's just not been as reliable as you need at this point. And those are the kind of guys you start to look around and be like, how can we improve? How can we just have somebody else who can slot above him? And if Phelps is moving past him on the depth chart, again, just adding a few extra guys in there to give you more options so that you can really find situations where A, Trevor Richards isn't going to kill you, or B, have Trevor Richards kind of improve and work up to a situation where he can be more reliable.
Yeah. And trust me, nobody feels worse than Trevor Richards. I'm sure he came up to Gausman yesterday and probably tapped him on the leg and said, "My bad." And sometimes this is the way the game goes, and those relievers don't want to go out there and give up runs. But, you know, we're talking about the trade deadline. There's a couple guys on the opposing dugout tonight that might fit the description in filling some voids in that Blue Jay bullpen. One of them was an all-star lefty, throws hard in Gregory Soto. He's a guy that obviously his name has been out there. And, you know, I've been pushing for Daniel Bard, another reliever who I feel like would fit this role really, really well. So there's a few names, and I know you're excited. I'm excited for this trade deadline. Obviously the Yankees got it started last night with Benintendi and all that stuff. And I saw the Blue Jays were in it too. So you have to just sit here and wonder now, like once that first domino falls, it's like, okay, now teams are going to start kind of going and looking and seeing what is it that it's going to take to get certain guys. And I'm really, really interested to see what the Blue Jays do and what Atkins and Shapiro have in mind, because I feel like the whole fan base is on edge about what they're going to do with that bullpen.
That is the move that needs to be made, frankly. You know, obviously start bolstering the starting pitching. Hey, maybe you can go to the Tigers for a couple of things. Be like, Tarek Skubal, Joe Jimenez, Gregory Soto. Just start shopping like you're at the grocery store. Just start throwing them in the cart and be like, what's it going to get back? The Andrew Benintendi move is an interesting one. Obviously, the Yankees. I really think Brian Cashman is a good general manager. I've said that many, many times for many, many years. And the one thing I really like about him, and he does this almost every year, is he doesn't wait. He's not worried about, oh, what if we overpay? And I don't want to be the guy that establishes the market and let's see what else is out there. Brian Cashman, Yankee general manager, knows this is what we need. This is what I want. And he goes out and he gets it. He makes those trades early. He did it. He's done it time and time again. And so they said, we need an upgrade in the outfield. We need to get someone who does the opposite of what Joey Gallo does, quite frankly. So they went and they got him. And the asking price, you know, three kind of lower level minor leaguers, guys who are pitchers, that the Yankees can, I saw somebody saying that basically the Yankees can just go sign all their day three of the draft guys and they've replaced all these guys. And the other thing is also if you're making a deal with Kansas City, given the way that their pitching player development is gone, you just assume they're going to screw it up anyway. But I really like, you know, I love that they don't wait, right? The Yankees aren't afraid of maybe quote unquote overpaying. They're like, this is what our club needs. We're trying to win the World Series. Let's go do it. And if this is the domino, this is the nudge that everybody needs, if people can look around and be like, okay, Benintendi, he had expressed some willingness to explore vaccination, given the fact that the Yankees only have to come back to Toronto once more. So even if Benintendi decides he's going to take a hard line, that's three games out of the remaining, 90 or 85 or however many are left. No, maybe more like 70. So you can maybe get by with that and then figure out things out in the playoffs, but also just like taking that initiative and going out and making those deals. And I think that the Blue Jays have demonstrated a willingness to make deals, to do the things that need to be done, right? Unlike the Yankees, the Blue Jays have made those big splashes. The Yankees haven't. There are a lot of Yankees fans who are wondering why Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is playing playing shortstop every day instead of Carlos Correa, instead of Corey Seager, because the Yankees didn't make those big splashes. The Blue Jays have done that. They signed George Springer, right? They signed Marcus Semien. They signed Hyunjin Ryu. Yeah. They extended Jose Barrios. They made the trade for Matt Chapman. Like, they're doing the things that they need to do. They signed Kevin Gausman. So just I feel like Blue Jays fans are hoping that that they can see the Blue Jays continue to make that commitment to making the team better. And I think that they're in a position where they could make a small but significant upgrade in the bullpen, where maybe the asking price isn't going to be that high. They can get the things that they need, like the things that Gregory Soto does, which is throw 100 miles an hour and not have so much concern about where it's going. Sign a guy like Jimenez or Dan Bard, same sort of situation. You know, they did well last year with those low cost Adam Simbers and Trevor Richards, but now it's time they got to, in the bullpen in particular, they got to really commit some more resources, I think, and make a bit of a bigger splash to really get it in line with what we see in all the good bullpens around baseball.
Yeah. And I agree with you. It's one of those things where this is the time to upgrade, and you have to upgrade, especially if you want to take it to that next level. It's not like, hey, let's just get to the playoffs and let's see what happens. No, it's we have the team around us. We got to go out there and win. And if we're looking in this clubhouse and I look at 25 guys, are these the 25 guys that I can trust in the playoffs? And if your answer is no, then there's your answer. You have to go out there and maybe flip-flop some guys. And again, it's going to be an interesting market just because I feel like with the extra playoff spot, there's still a lot of teams in the playoff race, that the reliever market is going to be at such a high demand that you have to wonder what kind of moves, who's going to be willing to trade those guys. Are the prices going to be too high because there's going to be a lot of bidders? Or are teams going to be like, okay, let's work out something here and there? It's just one of those things where I feel like pitching is going to be crazy this trade deadline, and I wonder if some teams are going to have to overpay for certain guys because, again, there's so many teams still kind of in the playoff picture right now, and you have to sit here and wonder, like, okay, what is it going to take to get a Soto? How many teams are going to come asking for a Gregory Soto? How many teams are going to come asking for a Daniel Bard? And are we willing to meet that asking price? I say yes. You know, there's you know, we've talked about prospects and all that stuff. Not all of them planned out. Not all of them. And if you have to cut ties with some of them, then so be it. It's to help the big league team right now, to win right now, to get to the World Series right now, and to win a damn World Series right now. That's the goal, and that's all that should matter.
And I think you said it well, which is that, you know, when the players are looking around their clubhouse, they don't want to see any of their teammates moved. But I think that if you're shopping in the way that if you're looking to upgrade in the way the Blue Jays are, you don't have to take anybody away from that room. And what was the line that that Blake Snell had on his stream the other day? Like some slapdick prospect. Like, I feel like the players can get behind that a little bit. I mean, maybe somebody else isn't going to be in that room because they're going to be down in Buffalo. But you know, it's not difficult to look around and be like, if we had this guy sitting over there, we'd be in a good position. And they're not, not, you know, the Juan Soto thing is nice to dream on, but I don't think the Blue Jays have like a Nolan Gorman to make a deal with, or a Dylan Carlson, or whoever or Brendan Donovan. Jeez, there's just so many of them. Stupid.
Let me ask you one thing, Drew. Does Gabriel Moreno being the number one prospect now, does that, like, in a trade, is his stock higher than a guy who's ranked number five? Like, does that change anything?
I don't think so. I don't think those like ordinal rankings are going to affect it. Like, Gabby Moreno made that step up right last year just with his play, and you know, he was hurt, but then he was just playing so well, and then he continued to play well. He's showing, in my mind, he's showing that stuff is real. So they can look at him and they can say he's got this tool, that tool, this tool, this tool. Whether Baseball America ranks him one or three, I don't think it makes it that much of a difference. It makes it, when people start, like, when you and I are sitting here after the fact being like, I can't believe they traded their number one, number six, and number 10 prospect. But, you know, the Blue Jays number one prospect versus like the Padres number one prospect versus the, you know, the White Sox number one prospect, like, they're not all, you know, not all number one prospects are created the same. Now, it's great to have him be the number one prospect in baseball. That's hard to do. And the Blue Jays, that hasn't happened very often. There, you know, there was Vlad, but before him, it was like, what, Carlos Delgado, I think, was the last guy who was like the top prospect in baseball. You know, Travis Snyder was like pretty high up there on some of those lists and things like that, you know, because of his age. And I think we evaluate things a little bit differently, you know, over time. But I think that he got to the big leagues, that he didn't look out of place, right? He didn't hit a lot in his little cup of coffee, but I think that is only going to make him that much more valuable, as much as where Baseball America slots him in compared to Baseball Prospectus. I mean, Baseball America is the one that has like the most cachet, but I think just that he's continued to perform. It doesn't look like a fluke. He's super athletic. He looked the part in the big leagues. To me, that's the thing that's going to make him have a lot of value when people are shopping around. But it's not quite the same as like these guys on St. Louis who are like playing every day and succeeding even still at the big leagues, and can just step right in and play, just like Moreno can as well.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I just wondered, if him being the number one prospect, if it means he's worth more in a deal or anything like that. And again, you have to wonder if they're going to, you know, what's going to happen there with three catchers and, you know, and Kirk and Jansen and Moreno, is one of them going to be dealt for a big time player, you know, for a guy like Juan Soto or something like that? Are they going to enter, you know, I guess you'd be dumb not to enter those talks and see what it would take just to see. But again, at the end of the day, it comes down to arms and having, it's the biggest cliche in baseball. And everyone says that you can never have enough arms, especially when you're getting ready to enter the playoffs and hopefully make a deep run. That's where the depth is tested incredibly big. And I feel like, we can talk Juan Soto all we want, but the biggest necessity for the Jays is obviously going to be pitching. And if they go out there and do that, then they're going to be just fine.
I'll ask you then. This is something Caitlin and I talked about a little bit on the Tuesday show, which was, there's been a lot of research into starting pitchers in the playoffs have their value goes through the roof because they're able to impact the games that much better. And not only can you get a great performance out of a starter who can win you a game and you only need to win four and then you move on to the next one. But I think what we've seen in recent history, the Dodgers, you know, have done a great job of this, and the Red Sox when they won the World Series too, which is suddenly some of your best relievers are your starters. where you can bring a guy in to be a starter with the idea or the intention that we can use him in the bullpen in the playoffs when every single game matters so much more. And it's not so much about like spacing things out and kind of getting through August and September. Do you think maybe there's value in the Blue Jays going after somebody who could kind of be a starter for now with the idea that you can move them to the bullpen in the playoffs?
Ooh, that's a good one. Is there anybody out there that, you know, that would be able to make that switch just like that in the playoffs?
Here's my suggestion, and it's Nate Eovaldi. Right? Nate Eovaldi, who did that exact job with Boston. Now, Boston is obviously in real turmoil right now. I don't know necessarily that they would trade him to the Blue Jays. I don't know the Blue Jays would, you know, he's not exactly pitching well, but he's the kind of guy who did that job. He's pitched out of the bullpen a few times in his career, while also, you know, when you get the most value out of him when you sign him long-term as a starter. But if you're trying to win the World Series, we can get you like pitch as well as you can. And if he pitches really well, then he stays in the rotation. And if he doesn't pitch as well, then you can be like, okay, well, you're going to come in, you're going to throw 98 out of the bullpen. You're going to do it. You're going to throw 2 innings in game two, and then you're going to throw 3 innings in game four. I think that a guy like that could, it, like what Robbie Ray did when we saw the Blue Jays in that 3-game series against the Rays. Yeah. I think that a guy like him, not necessarily him specifically, but there are other guys I think out there that could do that, right? That you could get them there. I mean, goddamn, Chris Sale got the last out of the World Series. He was a reliever for a little while, but that's not, he got them to the World Series and then he saved it for them. So I think that a guy that that can kind of do both is someone who, if I had my choice, maybe that's where I'm going to spend my time looking for somebody who could maybe do both of those jobs.
That's an interesting point, because you're right. You see a lot of that, especially in the playoffs, and the guys who are able to do that are like the guys who carry their teams deep into the playoffs. And I'd be curious to see what other names are out there that can do that kind of job, because it's not easy to be able to just go flip-flop, back and forth. But I know the playoffs obviously is a different beast, and I'm sure there's a different adrenaline rush. And when you're getting your call, the call from the bullpen and you're saying, all right, let's go, get me 12 outs, big boy, you know, whatever it is, and stuff like that. Again, it'll be interesting, you know, because if the playoffs started today, you know, who would be your top three starters? You have to sit there and wonder. Obviously, Manoah's got to be one of them. And then, I don't know, the way Gausman's going, obviously, he's probably the second one. And then the third one is Berrios, right? I mean,
it's got to be.
And it's one of those things where you sit there. I guess, you know, Ross Stripling, I mean, they have a guy in Ross Stripling who can do both. And in the subject that we were just talking about, he's a guy that can flip-flop from starter to reliever. And obviously, he's not a guy that is going to throw 100 or anything like that. But the guy still gets it up there to 94, 95. And he's a guy that can handle that type of job.
He's effective and he's efficient. So in the playoffs, he's a guy that maybe you could ask to do what, as I said, pitch game two and then pitch again in game four, like almost scripted out. Like if we get in trouble, we'll get somebody else in there and then we're going to give you the sixth. Sixth and seventh are going to be yours, that sort of thing. Here's another name that Stoughton wrote about in his The Batflip newsletter, and it's Noah Syndergaard. He could be that exact guy, right? Syndergaard's only been okay this year. Obviously, the Angels are in a position where they need to figure out some things. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. So maybe Syndergaard, you bring him in, see if you can get him within that Blue Jays, you know, really solid pitching ecosystem. If he can be a starter, awesome. If not, suddenly there's Thor throwing 100 out of the bullpen. Everybody wins. I'm very much coming around on the idea of this.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Everything, all these like question marks is what makes these conversations fun. Mm-hmm. And you sit here and you wonder and you're like, okay, for us, it's easy to like play GM and see like, this is how we would do it. This is how we would do it. And that's why I'm excited for the deadline and seeing what is it that the upgrades that the Jays make. And if they, you know, if they stay put, you know, I just, can you imagine if they stay put well, how this fan base would take that?
What about the fan base? What about the guys in the clubhouse? Now, this is something that the Blue Jays fans are sort of familiar with. What was that? That wasn't 2014, was it? No, 2011, right? With the Irvin Santana pass the hat thing, where you can't see this if you're listening to it, but Ricky just had like a full on eye roll right there.
Yeah, that was like really, really weird. I still remember that. That was really weird. And yeah, what a weird turn of events there.
But because I mean, I think that this team can win the World Series. I don't think I'm telling tales out of school by saying that the team with the number two or three offense, depending on how you look at it, and with a lot of potential and with some very high end pitchers, like, they can win the World Series, but they do need to improve. They need to upgrade it when they can. So if you are telling Vlad and Bo and whoever else that, well, maybe we'll wait till next year, that's going to be a little tough to swallow, I think, for some of those guys, for the George Springers who were like, I came here for a reason and I came here to win. And now you're kind of kicking the can down the road. I'm not getting any younger, so on and so forth. I think that would be a tough sell in the clubhouse as well.
Yeah, it would be 100%. And you want to send the right message to those guys that have been grinding their ass off all season for you. You know, you watch a guy like George Springer, who's been banged up here and there during the season, and he's going out there and he's playing, you know, his ass off. Vladdy, same thing. Bo, same thing. Teoscar, same thing. These guys are going out there, you know, and doing their thing. So you want to send the right message. You want to kind of lay down the authority and say, okay, we're here. You know, we're here. These are the guys we're adding. We're moving forward with these guys, and we're in it to win it.
More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruit and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Speaking of being in it to win it, so maybe that upgrade, the bullpen slash rotation upgrade, is waiting in the wings. Yusei Kikuchi, who goes for the Blue Jays tonight, returning from the injured list, after his very mysterious neck strain. Which was obviously not a neck strain. It was like an opportunity to go and work on some things. Again, Stoughton in his newsletter recently had some highlights of that Arash Madani was talking about some of the stuff that the Kikuchi was working on. Changes throwing program. He's using weighted balls. Changes slider grip. Tweaking his mechanics so he feels more in control. He's looking at starts, reeling his release point was kind of all over the place, trying to stabilize that. So like, this is not just like, these are significant things to be working on in season with 2 weeks effectively away from the team. But there's so much there. You and I have talked about it 100 times about a guy who just has such a great fastball, and he can, when he pitches off of it, he's such an effective guy, such an effective starter who could also be that same sort of guy who can move into the bullpen. What are you looking for tonight when Kikuchi takes the mound against a very bad offensive team in the Detroit Tigers?
Fastball command. I think you and I would both agree on that. It's his fastball command. Can he get that down? I don't care about him tightening up his slider, or, you know, I'm doing this to make it look less like a slider or a cutter or whatever he's trying to do. Fastball command. If he's able to command the plate, again, we all know he has the velocity. We all know he throws hard. is what can he do when it comes down to, you know, dotting a fastball down and away, brushing a guy back, getting that outer half again. And it'll be interesting for me, Drew, to see Danny Jansen, the way he approaches this, because he hasn't caught him in a while. And having a veteran back there in Danny, I don't know. I'm guessing he's going to catch him. I don't know if the lineup is out yet, but I'd be surprised if he isn't.
He's the guy that you would, if you're trying to shepherd somebody through these changes, you know, okay. Alejandro Kirk, you know, he's such a good receiver. So if maybe you need to steal some strikes, but the Kikuchi thing is like, they're not borderline pitches, right? They're here, there, yeah. and everywhere. You need somebody who can jump to keep them from going to the backstop. So maybe Jansen is the right guy.
Yeah.
But I think that fastball command, I agree 100%. Fastball command is so, it's big for everybody. And when you see, you even saw Jose Barrios the other night, when he can't control his fast, when he doesn't have that fastball command, he gets hit. And yeah. doesn't matter how you get the most beautiful curveball in the world, but if your fastball isn't going where you need it to go, it's going to get hit in the big leagues.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to body language too, you know, how he reacts to certain things. It's okay to give up a base hit. It's okay to give up a run. If you give up a run or two runs early on, hey, jump on my back. I'm still going to get you through six, you know, or seven. You know, a pitcher's line looks pretty good when it's seven innings, three runs, and you gave the team a chance to win. That's what I want to see out of Kikuchi tonight.
In 2022, if your pitching line starts with seven IP, it automatically looks good. Like, cause you only are getting there if you're pitching well. And yeah. if you give up three runs, four runs, but you're managing it. If you say Kikuchi pitches seven innings, gives up four solo home runs, but walks one, to me, I'm happy.
Oh,
I can work with that all day long. Just throw strikes. Yeah. Throw it over the middle of the fucking plate. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is that the reason I said Jansen, it's nothing against Kirk. Jansen, again, a veteran guy, a guy that I can feel like can grab Kikuchi and say, hey, me and you tonight, let's follow me. Follow me. Don't shake me. Follow me. I'll lead you. Let's just navigate through this lineup, you know, three times if we have to. Three times through. And I feel like Danny has that power to be able to do that and say, okay, I'm going to put down a fastball away. Trust me, trust it. And again, I had those catchers that would do that to me every once in a while when I was struggling. Don't shake me tonight. Just trust me. I got the game plan down. I don't want you thinking so much out there, because I feel like that's what's happened with Kikuchi. He thinks so much. He's trying to figure it all out rather than, okay, now I have my catcher that knows the game plan. I'm just going to go off of him. Boom, let's go. Boom, set the tempo early. If I'm able to set that tempo, then I've established myself with that good fastball command. And now I'm just cruising along the game. And I feel like if he does that, he's going to be just fine.
This is, I think, I don't know if maybe commend the Blue Jays is a bit of a strong term, but they've artfully selected the place for Kikuchi to start, because he is starting against Detroit, who are just a dreadful offensive team. They are last in the big leagues in home runs. Their batting line, they as a team are hitting 229, 286, 335. The Tigers as an entire team are slugging 335. Now, of course, this is the big leagues. These are big league hitters. These are guys that can all do damage. But when your entire team is basically like poor Tony Kemp, who's having a bit of an off year, like you're giving Tony Kemp vibes, that's not a good sign. So if ever there was a time for Yusei Kikuchi to come in and be aggressive, dare them to beat your fastball, dare them to hit it over the fence. They have not demonstrated the ability to do that. They've got, again, good professional, good hitters in that mix. Robbie Grossman has a great track record as a good hitter. Jonathan Scope is a good hitter. One of the worst hitters in baseball this year. Challenge them. No need to nibble. Cut that plate in half and say, this one's going to that half and this one's going to the other one. No need to get cute. Just inside, outside, up and down.
I got seven guys behind me. I'm going to use them all. That's my thought process. Here you go. Again, it's easier said than done. It depends what's going in between the ears. But mm-hmm. I feel like he's done the work. He's put in the work. He feels like he's in a good place mentally, that it's now it's just okay. I've done the hard work. Now I just got to go out there and execute. And if I'm able to do that, I got seven guys behind me that can all make plays. I'm going to use them tonight. Who cares if I give up 10 hard line drives at the infield. Who cares? They're outs. And if I get outs, that's all that matters right now for him.
Absolutely. I would much rather see, you know, the fewer walks. This, a guy like Kikuchi with his stuff, the strikeouts will come. Maybe that's not the measure of success tonight. Again, I'm for me, I want to see, if I'm the pitching coach, which I'm not, I want to see efficiency. Be efficient. Get ahead. Yep. Be aggressive. Then all the rest of that stuff will take care of itself. If you're ahead 1-2, 0-2 on hitters who are really struggling this year, they're going to help you get themselves out. You can throw that slider whenever you want when you're up in the count, but don't be in hitters' counts. Don't be letting them just completely spit on any of those pitches. Zone in on the fastball. Zone in one spot. It is absolutely what you cannot have against a team like this. So really want to see Kikuchi come out and be aggressive and have a good starting for his own sake, for the team's sake, and for the fan's sake as well. It all works.
You're right. I mean, for his sake, for the fan's sake, for the team's sake. And at the end of the day, he's still a key part in this rotation. They just didn't hand the money just to hand the money. They believe in this guy, and they believe that he's got the stuff to compete in the big leagues. He was an all-star, all that good stuff. We've said it a million times. He's got the stuff. Now he's got to go out there and execute it. And I love that word that you use, efficiency. Be efficient out there and just go out there and trust your stuff and let it play out. Trust that fastball, and everything will work off of that fastball. And if you're able to be successful with that heater, I guarantee you your secondary stuff is just going to be just as good.
Can't throw seven innings if you're at 80 pitches getting 12 or 13 outs, right? You need exactly that efficiency. You got to stretch it out. Now, maybe talking about pulling them aside, having that conversation, Yusei Kikuchi has not yet started under John Schneider, who is, of course, the manager of the Blue Jays. Now, not when Kikuchi went on the injured list with his phantom neck wound. A former catcher, a guy who's kind of, as we understand it, kind of pulls the team together before the game and gives them has a couple little lines to them. What do you think that a guy like, well, number one, what do you think of Schneider so far? What have you seen? Does anything look different? And what kind of stuff do you think he would say to a Kikuchi on a night like this?
Crazy you brought up that point, because I feel like Schneider is the type of guy, and he did it with me a lot. Put his arm around you and say, trust your fastball. That's what he would say. Trust your fastball. Work with me tonight. When I was struggling, he was catching me. Work with me tonight. Don't shake me. He'd call me Rook. And that's what we call each other, Rook. Even till this day, every time I walk into his office or I see him, hey, what's up, Rook? That's our nickname to each other. But that's what he would do. Put his arm around you. And one of the things I've seen that's different to me, Drew, and I just watching the games on TV, is the way he's interacted with his players. He's gone up to guys, put their arms around him. We saw it with Vladdy yesterday when he tagged up from second to third base and he got thrown out. He went up to him. There's nothing to you know, sometimes you sit there and wonder, you're like, oh, well, you just leave your superstar alone. No, he went right to him, put his arm around him, explained to him the situation, I'm sure. And there was that. We saw it with Manoah when he was going at the Red Sox bench the other day, and he went, sat down next to him, put his arm around him, and they had a conversation. And I love that, man. And that's one thing that I feel like we didn't see with Charlie. And it just seems like Schneider has like this deeper connection with his players from what I'm seeing on TV. And it just seems like, to me, the dugout seems a little bit loose. He's out there, you know, warming up his arm, throwing batting practice. He's so involved in everything that he hasn't let, you know, him being a manager, get in between of the routine that he's used to. And I love that. And again, he's a guy that I'm going to continue to root for. He was a former teammate of mine and a guy that is a hard worker, has paid his dues. And I feel like the 25 guys, along with the coaches, have tremendous respect for him. And you can just see it. You can just see the difference in everything. You just see a different team, a different vibe. And you know, credit to him for being able to step in, because it's not easy to just be a big league manager and just come in and say, okay, this is the way stuff is going to get done. No, it's you're seeing it. You saw the All-Star game videos and stuff like that, the way he made these guys feel like when they were announced All-Stars, and Espinal and Romano and all that good stuff. Just little things like that I feel like this team is going to grow closer and closer. And he's it almost seems like he's starting to build that culture in there where, hey, we're going to be a team. We're going to communicate, and if something needs to be said, I feel like the guys on that in that clubhouse have that respect for him.
As the first ever Blue Jays manager who is younger than me, I don't know what to think. But I mean, there's only so many levers he could pull. They're still the Blue Jays. They're scoring lots of runs because they have a good offense. This is what I think. Those small things, those conversations, that trust, that looseness, that ability to convey to the players what they need to know, and but also, you know, get them excited about doing their work, and kind of like, you know, even if it was just the act of changing managers can kind of brought that along. But, you know, they're a good offense because they were always a good offense. They scored a ton of runs because that's how they're going to be. I would love to be able to credit John Schneider for being the kind of guy who made that change. But we've seen a few things, you know, a few hit and runs here and there. Hit and run with Vlad last night, hit and run with Santiago Espinal and Matt Chapman a few different times. So that's always nice to see. And that conversation between Schneider and Vlad would be an interesting one, because I'm a sucker for aggressive base running to the point
of reckless,
like run like a maniac. That's I'm all in for that. Nobody was a better base runner in my mind than Jose Bautista. Just a complete lunatic out there. Give me all the extra bases you got. Make a play. that's my philosophy. It's the big leagues. Everybody can throw, everybody can catch, but still make them make a play. So being able to have those conversations with Bo, with Vlad, guys who are aggressive on the base paths, and you know, be you, do you, I think that's kind of what that, for me, what I would love to have, know the substance of that conversation. Be you, be aggressive, go out there and make plays, but let's be have a little bit of awareness. We don't want to make third out of third base. Yeah.
And I think that's what it was. It was more like, hey, I love the aggressiveness, but let's know the situation there. Let's know who's up. Maybe it was just a little reminder, or maybe it was like, hey, what did you see? You know, maybe it was something like, what did you see? What did you think? Maybe it was something like that. You know, maybe it wasn't him getting on him over it. Maybe it's like, what did you see? Okay, cool. You know, let's just be, you know, make sure we're 100% next time. Because you even saw Big Daddy, Big Al, you know, get on Vladdy too about it, and just have a conversation about it. And it's just, you know, part of the game. Again, yeah, you can't really fault somebody for being aggressive. It's just more knowing the situation and knowing and being 100% that you're going to get, you know, to that next base without being thrown out or anything like that. Or make, again, it's two outs, know the situation. Bo, a guy who can, you know, make contact at any point. You're going to score from second base anyway. So it's one of those things where, yeah, again, John Schneider has created that culture in the little time that he's been manager, and where he's able to have those communication, that type of communication with guys, and able to go up to his superstars and maybe say, hey, like, what are we thinking, or what are we doing here? And you see the smiles on those guys after or whatever, and or the smirks and stuff like that. So again, it's nothing personal. It's just more, hey, we're here to win ball games. Let's play the game right. I love the aggressiveness, but let's make sure we're playing smart.
I'm glad you brought up Albert Pujols, who of course got like a really nice ovation from Blue Jays fans twice. The first one, he seemed genuinely surprised and touched. Yeah. Obviously Albert Pujols is like very truthfully one of the greatest players to ever play the game. And it's really fun to see him in that sort of role. You see him when they show shots of that Blue Jays, or the Cardinals dugout. He seems to take that role seriously. It's really fun that he's back in that capacity, right? Where he's back in St. Louis, where it all started, where he's getting to play. He's been good this year, you know, better than he had been in previous years. A lot of fun. I don't know what you think, or if you have any, what kind of interactions you've ever had with Albert Pujols, but it seems like someone who's just respected, you know, across the board in the game, obviously, for being one of the best players ever.
Yeah, no, I've had a lot of interactions. I've actually played in his golf tournament when he was back in Anaheim. And, you know, we exchanged text messages from time to time. He's a guy that's always donated, you know, a signed bat or a signed jersey to my camp when I host one back in East LA. So he's a first class human being. And he's a guy that you're just like in awe every time you're in his presence, you know, or I'm in his presence, because you realize everything he's done for the game. And holy smokes, drew 686 home runs. I didn't realize he was that close to 700. And it's almost like you, I saw Edwin Encarnacion yesterday on Instagram, an old school name that I'm going to drop on you, Octavio Dotel, commenting on Edwin's post saying, please, Cardinals, let this guy play so that he can reach 700. And I sat there thinking about it, and I was like, I wonder if they're going to play him a little bit more the second half to see if he does get, you know, to 700, or does Albert Pujols, you know, what if he's at 695 by the end of the year? Does he maybe try and come back and try and hit five more home runs? And I mean, it's a big deal. And again, a guy that's done so much for this game, the interview with Hazel May that he had a couple days ago was amazing. He talked about that interaction between him and Santiago Espinal, and you know what he tries to do for the younger guys, all that stuff, and it just shows you the human being that he is, the stuff that he does behind closed doors with all his foundations and stuff like that. Again, a guy that you just continue to root for. I almost feel like once he hit that 3-run home run, it was like everyone was like, "It's Albert Pujols, it's okay."
Yeah, I mean. Most fans, you don't know. You buy your tickets months ahead of time. You know, folks come in from out of town. You go do whatever. But if you came to the game and you obviously want to see, if you're a Blue Jays fan, you want to see the Blue Jays win. But if you get to see Albert Pujols hit a home run, that's the kind of thing that you're probably going to remember. You can hopefully take it away. And I think it would be great if Pujols was able to get 700. But again, this is a guy who's got like 100 wins above replacement for his career. He's got his 3,000 hits. He's coming up on 1,900 runs scored, got 2,100 RBIs, you know, just, you know, truly one of the great players. So I don't think that missing out on 700 home runs is going to be like a blemish on his record. Also, four hits in four at bats against Ricky Romero.
Did he?
4 for 4, one double, no home runs, 4 hits, 3 singles.
Wow. Damn. Oh, you know what? I think he hit a broken bat double off the wall at the Rogers Center, where they were all at home, right?
Yeah, it was one game. It was before he went to Anaheim, 2010, June 23rd. It was a one. What a game. My gosh, 1-0.
Did I win or did I lose?
You lost. No, you, Kevin Gregg, you threw 8 shutout innings, gave up 8 hits, struck out 5, walked 1. But then they were able to get one off Kevin Gregg. Chris Carpenter on the other side, matched you pitch for pitch. He walked a couple more, but didn't give up quite as many hits. Vernon Wells had 2 hits that day. John Buck had 1. Jared, oh my God, who played third base? Will you be able to remember who played third base for the Blue Jays? I'll tell everybody else.
No, I think I heard that. Is it Jarrett Hoffpower?
It is. It is. That's wild. I didn't even know that I knew that name. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. I remember that game. Now that you bring it up, I had forgotten about that game, because the St. Louis Cardinals game that I remember is obviously the game in St. Louis where I threw a complete game, got my base hit and all that good stuff. But I don't think Yadier Molina or Pujols were in the lineup that day. I think they took the day off because it was a Sunday game. But I forgot they came down here and I did well against them. And I do remember now Pujols, I couldn't get him out. He was still the machine and he was still the guy that was tough to get out at that time. And I think I threw him everything and I couldn't get him out. And but hey, if I'm in his book for 4 hits out of the, how many does he have? Over 3,000?
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm all good, man. As long as he didn't beat me, that was good.
Yeah, didn't take you deep. Didn't get you. He's got 3,340 hits, which is just insane to say out loud. Yadi Molina was in the lineup that day. Colby Rasmus at that game at the Rogers Center before he became a Blue Jay. Randy Wynn.
Randy
David
Wynn.
Freeze, World Series hero that year. No, the following year, World Series hero. Was it that year? No, wow. That 2010 was the Giants. Matt Holliday, of course, whose son was drafted first overall. How does that make you feel?
Hey, Matt Holliday, I feel like my numbers against Matt Holliday are pretty good. I feel like I dominated him throughout my career.
All right, I can look this up. We do need to get going. We gotta get out of here. It has been a great opportunity to chat with you. Matt Holliday was 2 for 10 against you. 2 strikeouts, okay. No walks, no extra base hits. You got him. You got him good.
Bingo.
Bingo. That changeup working all day against those right-handed batters.
Always.
Always. Ricky, it's great to chat. Blue Jays looking ahead to this series against the Tigers and then into a little bit more of the divisional stuff. I believe they go off to face Tampa Bay next week, do they not? So that'll be interesting. But it's great to talk to you. Of course, you can listen to Ricky on MLB Radio on the weekends. Is that correct still?
Yep, correct.
Awesome. Correct. MLB Radio, dial Ricky up on the weekend. We'll be back next week with more me and Ricky, more me and Caitlin on the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast, which is, of course, called Spin Doctor.